Hi everyone, today we're going to be reading the Everett Independent. This edition is from Wednesday, December 17th, 2025. Van Kampen appoints Omar Boukili as the CAFO, special to the Independent. Mayor-elect Robert Van Kampen announced the appointment of Omar Boukili as the city's Chief Administrative and Financial Officer, the CAFO, effective January 6th, 2026. Boukili will oversee the city's administrative operations and financial management with a focus on fiscal responsibility, operational excellence, and transparent, accountable government. Omar brings a rare combination of strategic leadership, operational discipline, and hands-on experience delivering results in complex public organizations, said Mayor-elect Van Kampen. As we begin a new chapter for Everett, Omar's track record, rationalizing operations, strengthening systems, and leading through high-stakes moments will help us build a stronger foundation and deliver better services for residents. As CAFO, Boukili will lead the city's administrative services, finance, budgeting, and procurement functions, and will work closely with department leaders to align resources with community priorities and the mayor-elect's policy agenda. He will also advance long-term financial planning, performance management, and cross-department operational improvements that strengthen service delivery. "I'm honored by Mayor-elect Van Kampen's trust," said Boukili. "Everett is one of the most dynamic and sought-after communities in the Commonwealth, and I'm excited to partner with city employees, elected officials, and the community to strengthen stewardship of public funds, improve internal systems, and ensure residents receive reliable, high-quality services." Boukili brings 15 years of public sector leadership experience, including senior roles serving the cities of Boston, Somerville, and Revere. He pairs strategic, results-focused leadership with hands-on operational execution and a data-driven management style that strengthens accountability, improves performance, and delivers measurable results. Boukili holds degrees from Harvard University and the University of California, Berkeley. This appointment reflects Mayor-elect Van Kampen's commitment to building a results-oriented administration focused on fiscal discipline, transparency, and dependable service delivery. City Council honors La Perle on its 14th anniversary, by Carrie Schumann. The City Council honored La Perle Restaurant's owners Valerie Joseph and Evans Pierre Sunday at the popular establishment's 14th anniversary celebration. Councilor-at-Large Guerlain Elsie-Jabouin joined her colleagues, City Council President Stephanie Martins, Ward 5 Councilor and Mayor-elect Robert Van Kampen, and Ward 4 Councilor Holly Garcia in presenting a citation at the Caribbean Restaurant in Everett Square. Elsie-Jabouin, who sponsored the citation, began the speaking program. "We are at La Perle to present a citation to thank them for their wonderful service to the community and giving us a space where we all feel comfortable to come in and bring in friends, colleagues, and whoever that wants to dine in a nice restaurant in a great environment," said Elsie-Jabouin. "We love Val Joseph and want to show her our appreciation." Van Kampen, who drew a warm ovation from the guests, said, "It's a pleasure to be here tonight. Val, you have made this space a vibrant community space, not just for our Haitian community, but for our entire community." Van Kampen highlighted the Haiti national soccer team's qualification for the 2026 World Cup. Haiti will be competing in June at Boston at Gillette Stadium in Foxborough. "I want to give a shout out. I didn't realize what a big deal it was that the Haitian national soccer team made the World Cup. Let's hear it for them," declared Van Kampen. Addressing the co-workers of La Perle, Van Kampen concluded, "I'm honored to be here with my council colleagues to celebrate another year of success for you, and I hope for many more years of success here in Everett Square." Joseph said that she was born and raised in Haiti and came to the U.S. when she was 14 years old, and this is the 14th anniversary of the restaurant. "The restaurant started at 41 Bow Street in Everett, and now we are located at 444 Broadway in Everett," she added proudly. Haitian media personality Karel Pedre was among the special guests who attended the festive anniversary celebration that featured outstanding Haitian cuisine and musical entertainment. Representative Garcia tapped for Early Education and Care Workforce Council, special to the Independent. State Representative Judith Garcia, a Democrat of Chelsea, has been appointed by Speaker of the House Ronald J. Mariano to serve on the Early Education and Care Workforce Council, a statewide body established to strengthen and stabilize the early education and care workforce in Massachusetts. Representative Garcia's 3-year term begins immediately. The Early Education and Care Workforce Council is charged with developing strategies to recruit, retain, and support early educators, recognizing them as the backbone of the Commonwealth's efforts to ensure that every child has access to high-quality early learning. The council brings together state officials, educators, workforce experts, and community leaders to address persistent staffing shortages, strengthen professional pathways, and improve compensation and workplace conditions for early childhood educators. I'm proud to appoint Representative Garcia to the Early Education and Care Workforce Council, as her experience serving on the legislature's Joint Committee on Education will allow her to bring a unique and valuable perspective to the important work that the council will do, said House Speaker Ronald J. Mariano, a Democrat of Quincy. I'm confident that the council's work will help to ensure that the Commonwealth continues to support the early education and care sector while also advancing the progress that we've already made towards providing more affordable, high-quality programming for families across Massachusetts. Representative Garcia, a member of the legislature's Joint Committee of Education, calling the appointment an extraordinary opportunity to elevate the voices of families, educators, and working parents in communities like Chelsea and Everett. Early educators play a crucial role in supporting children and families, said Representative Garcia. They are caregivers, teachers, mentors, and essential contributors to our local economy. I am grateful to Speaker Mariano for entrusting me with this responsibility, and I look forward to working with the council to ensure early childhood educators have the stability, respect, and resources they need to do their jobs effectively, benefiting children, families, and our community as a whole. Garcia noted that the early education and care workforce is especially vital in gateway communities where families rely on accessible and high-quality child care to support employment, education, and economic mobility. The Workforce Council meets regularly to develop recommendations for legislative, regulatory, and budgetary action to strengthen the early education and care workforce pipeline across Massachusetts. State Fire Marshal reminds residents, beware of Christmas tree fire hazards. As the holiday season gets underway, State Fire Marshal John M. Devine is reminding residents to select Christmas trees carefully, water them every day, and decorate them safely to reduce the risk of a fire. A dry Christmas tree can burn like a forest fire in your home, said State Fire Marshal Devine. Water it every day or firefighters might have to do it for you. The Department of Fire Services recommends the following Christmas tree safety tips to help you have a silent night. Choosing a tree. Select a fresh tree with needles that bend and stay fixed to the branches. If a tree's needles crack when you bend them or if they fall off when you run your hand along a branch, the tree is already drying out and you should choose a different tree. Have about 2 inches cut from the bottom of the trunk before you put it up. Sap can clog an older cut and prevent it from absorbing water in the stand. Picking the right spot at home. Place your tree in a sturdy stand away from doors and windows. These are your escape routes in the event of an emergency, and firefighters may need to use them to enter. Keep the tree at least 3 feet from any heat source, including fireplaces, wood stoves, heating vents, radiators, and space heaters. Water the tree every day. A fresh tree will drink a lot of water. It may need to be watered more than once a day at first, so keep the water level high. If the bottom of the trunk is exposed to air, sap could seal it off and cause it to dry out prematurely. Even the freshest tree will start to dry out after a few days. Dispose of it promptly after the holiday. Decorate safely. Choose lights that are listed by an independent testing laboratory like UL or Intertech/ETL and follow the manufacturer's instructions and safety information. Before plugging in a string of lights or hanging it on the tree, check the wiring for cracks, pinches, and wear. Discard any damaged strings. When decorating outdoors, be sure the lights and extension cords are rated for outdoor use and plug them into an outlet with a ground fault circuit interrupter. Almost half of home decoration fires start with candles and other heat sources too close to decorations. Keep lit candles on a sturdy saucer or candle holder at least 3 feet from the tree. Even better, switch to battery-powered flameless candles, which flicker just like the real thing. For a video clip showing a Christmas tree fire under controlled conditions, visit the Department of Fire Services YouTube channel. DFS adds new interior drone resources to support fire and rescue, special to the Independent. The Department of Fire Services has added 3 new drones to its special operations fleet that will allow fire/rescue personnel to stream footage from hazardous indoor environments, State Fire Marshal John M. Devine said. Drones were a giant step forward for situational awareness in the fire service, said State Fire Marshal Devine. Up until now, we've used them primarily to provide aerial footage from outside a structure or above a large wildfire or search area. These new drones can operate reliably inside a building, which will be especially valuable for hazmat, structural collapse, and other dangerous calls. DFS tested the drones over the course of 2025 and procured 3 of them during the fall. The Special Operations Team demonstrated the drones for DFS hazmat technicians, state police fire investigators, and bomb technicians assigned to the State Fire Marshal's Office and the Massachusetts Firefighting Academy's senior leadership for input before announcing the new program publicly. The drones were also put into use on board the USS Massachusetts during the Massachusetts Association of Technical Rescue Specialists 2025 Tech Rescue Challenge. We try to gather as much information on the hot zone environment as we can before sending a hazmat technician downrange, said Timothy Gallagher, Deputy Director of the DFS Hazardous Materials Emergency Response Division. The real-time footage from these drones could help us identify hazards or threats, allowing us to form an entry plan that's safer for our personnel. Fire investigators are often called to structures that are badly damaged and unsafe for entry, said Lieutenant Mark Reedy, commander of the State Police Fire and Explosion Investigation Unit assigned to the State Fire Marshal's Office. Our bomb technicians frequently have to assess suspicious devices and energetic materials in homes, businesses, and other buildings. Streaming a live feed from these environments to a safe location is a smart use of technology to keep first responders and the public out of harm's way. The DFS Special Operations Team provided direct operational support to local fire departments with assets that many departments need occasionally, but few can afford to purchase. Its resources include 4 rehab units to keep firefighters healthy, hydrated, and fed at large-scale incidents, 3 incident support units to provide on-scene communications, conferencing and mapping capabilities, all-terrain vehicles to shuttle personnel and equipment in remote or off-road environments, and a variety of trailer-based resources to make a tough job a little easier. It has delivered drones and certified pilots for about 10 years, consistently upgrading to reflect the latest advances. About a dozen are staged across Massachusetts for rapid response when requested. Everett's first responders and community partners team up to take 34 kids holiday shopping. The Everett Police Department, EPD, in collaboration with the Everett Fire Department, EFD, Elliott Family Resource Center, EFRC, Cataldo Ambulance Service, and Target held the annual Shop with Heroes and Helpers event at the Target location in Everett. The evening kicked off at EPD headquarters, where participating children and volunteers enjoyed an escorted ride with lights and sirens to Target. Once there, attendees gathered for pizza, popcorn, and other refreshments before the 34 youth shoppers were paired with volunteers to begin searching for the perfect holiday gifts to take home. What makes the event especially meaningful was the generosity shown by the young participants, as many chose gifts not only for themselves, but also for their family members. Their kindness truly captured the spirit of the season and highlighted the impact of a community coming together to support one another. Each year, the EPD hosts initiatives such as the Fill a Cruiser Toy Drive event and the 25 Days of Gift giveaways to children throughout December as part of the department's ongoing commitment to spreading holiday cheer and building meaningful and lasting connections with the Everett community. McGonagall Bill Protecting Transit Workers, signed by Governor Healey. Representative Joe McGonagall celebrated a major victory when his bill, an act relative to assault and battery upon a transit worker, was signed into law by Governor Maura Healey in a ceremony at the State House, surrounded by other legislators, transit workers, and advocates. The bill expands current laws on assault and battery against public employees to include public transit workers, ensuring they receive similar legal protections as other public employees. McGonagall has been working on this issue since 2021. Our transit workers provide critical services all over the Commonwealth, yet are many times assaulted by the very customers they serve. I have listened to dozens of stories of these workers being stabbed, spit on, and threatened, and it must stop, said McGonagall. I am so thrilled that the entire legislature has prioritized this important issue. The right to feel safe and supported on the job is just that, a right. I'm also extremely grateful to the brave men and women who came forward to share their stories. Thank you especially to House Speaker Mariano, Chair Day, my colleagues in the Senate, especially Senator Nick Collis, and all of those who helped get this bill passed, and a big thank you to Governor Healey and Lieutenant Governor Driscoll for recognizing the importance of this legislation. Public transportation employees do important work every day to keep our trains and buses moving on time and ensure the safety of all passengers, said Governor Healey. They should never be subject to any form of assault simply for doing their jobs. This bill ensures that they have the protections they deserve and will enhance safety for all users of our public transportation system. I'm grateful to the leadership of Chairs Day and Edwards, Senator Collins, Representative McGonigal, our partners in the legislature, and the Carmen's Union to pass this essential legislation. This bill responds to growing concerns from transit agencies and labor advocates about the rising number of attacks on workers, making the passage of this legislation critical, said House Speaker Ronald J. Mariano, a Democrat of Quincy. The House remains committed to protecting workers and supporting those who serve the Commonwealth in essential roles. I want to thank Governor Healey for signing this bill into law, as well as Chairman Day, Chairman McGonigal, and all my colleagues in the House, along with our partners in the Senate, for recognizing the importance of this legislation. I also would like to give a big shout-out to all public transit employees in the Commonwealth, said McGonigal. You all provide an essential service every single day in the face of violence and threats. Thank you to those who came forward to tell your stories and advocate for this bill. Thank you especially to Boston Carmen's Union Local 589 and their Vice President, Billy Beardino, in their incredible work on this bill. Effective January 4th, 2026, this bill creates a heightened penalty for perpetrators of assault and battery against public employees. It also adds public transit workers or any transit worker contracted or employed to operate public transit services to the list of public employees subject to this section. The bill also broadens the definition of assault to include the projection of bodily fluids. Everett Mann pleads guilty to selling firearms, special to the Independent. An Everett Mann pleaded guilty today to trafficking more than half a dozen firearms, including AM-15 rifles. Joe Victor De Silva Soares, 21, pleaded guilty to one count of dealing firearms without a license and one count of conspiracy to engage in the business of dealing in firearms without a license. U.S. District Court Judge Myung J. Jun scheduled sentencing for April 1st, 2026. De Silva Soares was charged by criminal complaint in January 2025 and subsequently indicted by a federal grand jury in July 2025. Between August and September 2024, De Silva Soares supplied firearms for sale in eastern Massachusetts. Specifically, on August 26, 2024, De Silva Soares delivered two AM-15 rifles and sold them for $6,000 in a parking lot in Malden. On September 11, 2024, De Silva Soares participated in another sale involving a total of five firearms consisting of rifles, pistols, and a shotgun outside a residence in Milford. The charges of conspiracy and engaging in the business of dealing firearms without a license each provide for a sentence of up to 5 years in prison, 3 years of supervised release, and a fine of up to $250,000. Sentences are imposed by a federal district court judge based upon the U.S. sentencing guidelines and statutes which govern the determination of a sentence in a criminal case. United States Attorney Leah B. Foley, Thomas Greco, Special Agent in charge of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, Boston Field Division, Michael J. Kroll, Special Agent in charge of Homeland Security Investigations in New England, and Patricia H. Hyde, Field Officer Office Director, Boston, U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Removal Operations, made the announcement today. Valuable assistance was provided by the Massachusetts State Police and the Malden and Milford Police Departments. Assistant U.S. Attorney John Reynolds of the Organized Crime and Gang Unit is prosecuting the case. EHS boys basketball to host Lynn Classical Tuesday at 3 o'clock. The Everett High boys basketball team will be hosting Lynn Classical, always one of the top teams in the Greater Boston League, GBL, in a key early season matchup next Tuesday afternoon, December 23rd. The opening tip for the varsity contest is scheduled for 3 o'clock. EHS head coach Gerard Boyce and his crew who opened their season last night on Tuesday against GBL foe Malden, are looking forward to the coming season with eager anticipation. The 2025-26 edition of the Crimson Tide will be led by a trio of senior captains, Christian Vasquez, Jaden Sanchez, and Adam Idemasoud. The other members of the varsity squad who make the cut from the 32 who tried out are David Xavier, Samir King DaCosta, Benji Joseph, Tyrese Joseph, Saul Flores, Jameel Nelson, Jacazio Lubrena, Jaden Alcindor, Emmanuel Nelson, Josiah Pisapia, Isaac D'Souza, Kim Adams Dormaville, and Nathaniel Nelson. Key returnees from last year's squad, which finished at 10-10 on the season after a 2-6 start and qualified for the postseason state tourney, are Vasquez and Alcindor, who's a junior. "The energy during our preseason has been positive," said Boyce, who's in his third year at the helm of the EHS boys program. "Our strengths this year include improved team chemistry, as many of these kids have been playing together since 8th grade. On the other hand, one of our weaknesses is that we are smaller than in previous years. Our short-term goal is to be competitive every night, while our long-term goal focuses on teaching the kids valuable life lessons like attendance, attitude, and accountability. We're looking forward to a great season." The Tide were scheduled to open their season last night on Tuesday with a home contest for GBL foe Malden that was highlighted with a blackout theme. They will make the short trek across the parkway to GBL rival Chelsea tomorrow on Thursday, and then travel to non-league opponent Brockton on Friday. EHS girls basketball hosts Chelsea. The Everett High girls Lady Crimson Tide basketball team is ready to roll into the 2025-2026 season under the direction of head coach Riley Dunn, who is in her sixth year at the helm of the Everett girls program. A trio of senior captains, Casey Martinez, Nicole DeMassino, and Katerin Landaverde, will lead the team. Key returning players include junior Kylie Nord, sophomore Juliana Rivera, and senior Rosita Punn. The squad also will feature a quartet of exciting newcomers in Dunn's word. In sophomores Abigail Falkowski, seniors Amanda Vertero and Ariana Roos, and junior Ashley Heath. "We're very excited for this upcoming season," said Dunn. "We have very strong senior leadership on the court and in the classroom. Casey, Nicole, and Katerin are all in and have already set the tone from the start. Our newcomers will make a huge impact on our team immediately," Dunn continued. "Returners Juliana Rivera and Kylie Nord will be a big help to the team as they embrace their larger roles this year. We had record numbers this year for tryouts. We had almost 50 girls fill the gym and work hard for 3 days," Dunn said. "I'm very excited for the future of the program as we had our largest freshman class make their mark at tryouts. The freshmen are motivated, coachable, and ready to work hard and learn. I'm proud to say that we will have 3 levels of competitive basketball, freshman, JV, and varsity." The Lady Crimson Tide engaged in 3 postseason scrimmages, 2 contests at Melrose and Whittier Tech, which will help build our road confidence, said Dunn, and at home against Malden Catholic. "All 3 were very competitive teams, which helped us get better and focus on what we need to do to improve upon," Dunn noted. Dunn will be supported by a strong group of assistant coaches, including assistant coach Courtney Menninger, who is returning from last year. "Courtney's hard work and passion for coaching is unparalleled," said Dunn. "We're so lucky to have her on our team." A new face on the bench will be former EHS player Tatiana Moran, who will also take on the role of assistant varsity coach. Jason Green is the new JV head coach. "Coach Green brings passion, knowledge, and a longtime love of Everett basketball to the mix," said Dunn. "I'm so happy to have him. He's no doubt will get our JV girls ready for the next level." Also joining the staff this year is the new freshman coach, Michaela Turner, who is a math teacher at EHS. "Michaela oozes passion and positive energy in any room she walks into," said Dunn. "She has played competitive basketball, and we are excited for her to help build the foundation of the program at the freshman level. This coaching staff is driven, committed, and ready to get to work, and I am very grateful and excited to get to work," said Dunn. "We've had great energy in the gym, and I'm really excited to get to coach this group of girls," Dunn said. "They want to win, they want to compete, they are ready to put the work in. Our team motto this year is whatever it takes. I think it represents our team because these girls truly are willing to sacrifice for each other and push each other and themselves to get better. This is a special group, and I can't wait to see them shine." Dunn and her crew were scheduled to open their season yesterday on Tuesday at Greater Boston League GBL rival Malden and will host GBL foe Chelsea on Thursday for a 6 o'clock opening tip in the HS gym. It's been great energy to start, and we're looking forward to keeping it rolling and having an unforgettable season. Roll Tide, Dunn added. Boys track runs past Lynn English. The Everett High boys indoor track and field team opened its season in winning style with a 67-9 triumph over a Greater Boston League GBL rival, the Lynn English Bulldogs, this past Friday at the Reggie Lewis Track and Athletic Center in Roxbury. Among the highlights for Coach Jehu Simia's Crimson Tide was the performance of senior captain Kervins Joseph, who sped to victory in the 55-meter dash with a personal record PR sprint of 6.81, a clocking that was the fastest time of the evening among all of the GBL schools who were competing at the Reggie in their own dual meets. Kervins also won the 300 with a sprint of 38.68, which was the third fastest time of the night at the Reggie, to tally 10 points for the Tide. Kervins led the way after teammate Kayshawn Evillard was sidelined by a hamstring injury during warm-ups. "He really stepped up for us," said EHS head coach Jehu Simia, who noted that Evillard is expected to make his debut on the 27th. In the 55, junior teammate Sandesh Pun grabbed third place versus the Bulldogs with a time of 7.45, and in the 300, Jonathan Hernandez grabbed second with a clocking of 42.07. In the 600 event, junior Santiago Terzio Escorcia took first place with a time of 1 minute and 48.18 seconds. Senior teammates Wilmer Fuentes and Dante Gell went 2-3. In the 1000, juniors Carlos Pagan Landeo and Christopher Portillo Cruz finished 2-3.